Welcome to Abound in Hope, a podcast from Imprint Church. Our goal is to help you apply the hope of the gospel of Jesus Christ to everyday life.
Welcome back to Abound in Hope. I am Rex Gorman. I'm sitting here with...
This is Tom McGregor.
And...
Hey, I'm Tom Regan.
And we also have a very special guest with us today. Very special guest. Who are you?
Nice to meet you, everyone. My name is Jeff Potts. I'm the pastor at Hope Community up in Snohomish.
Yeah, and hey, Tom, why is Jeff here with us?
Yeah, Jeff's here because we are in the middle of a podcast series that we're calling Lampstands. It comes out of the book of Revelation. Our last series also came out of Revelation as well. But here we are in Revelation 1. The author John writes in chapter 1, verse 12, "Then I turned to see the voice that was speaking to me, and on turning I saw seven golden lampstands, and in the midst of the lampstands one like a son of man." And then goes on to this glorious description of Jesus Christ, the risen son of man. And so the lampstands are identified at the end of chapter 1 as the local churches that John is writing to.
Yeah,
and so
yeah.
We love this idea that the local church is a lampstand, and specifically that Jesus walks among, is in the midst of the lampstands. So that's what makes the local church so amazing, is it's not just a collection of random individuals who happen to believe the same creed.
Yeah.
Well, that's important. It's the fact that the living Christ is in and walking among his people in the lampstand. So
yeah, absolutely.
We want to kind of gather some of the stories, gather some of our pastoral friends from around the region, and remind ourselves that Jesus is at work in churches around the region. We believe he's at work and alive and among us here at Imprint Church, but also believe that it's cool to see and hear the stories of Jesus working in other churches. So
yeah.
We want to invite Jeff along. I've known him for a little while, and we'd love to hear his story. And Jeff, tell us a little bit about like how you ended up in pastoral ministry. Like, just kind of rewind as far back as you want to, and we'll eventually make our way up to the current day and your church, Hope Community Church.
Jeff, where are you from, man?
So originally from Kirkland, Washington.
Oh, so you're local.
Yep, totally local.
That's funny. There's not a ton of locals, actually.
I know. I've got the mold in my bones, man. Pacific Northwest for life.
You're wearing gray, so I guess that makes sense. But anyway,
It's all gray all the time
hot
for
tea,
me.
So. Yeah.
Because I've already had enough coffee.
I saw Jeff at Sidekick Coffee yesterday. He was drinking coffee. We were drinking coffee. So
not scared to drink coffee.
Yeah, that's funny. Anyway, so you're from the area, man. What did growing up around here look like, and in regards to like church and faith and that kind of thing?
Yeah, so I was fortunate. Both of my parents got saved when I was a baby. So I'm the second of six in my family. And both of my parents grew up in secular homes, didn't have faith, and then they got saved like in their early 20s.
Wild.
Like early on in their marriage. Yeah, totally.
Was that through friends inviting them to church? Was that like a small group Bible study? Like, hey, join us, or do you know this
It
story?
Was a small group Bible study that invited them to come in, and so they just, it was just people that loved them and cared for
That's
them.
Awesome.
My dad was at the University of Washington and, got pregnant with... his then girlfriend, they got married and had my older sister got married like in that process. And then he was still going to school and got reached out to there. And then they started going to church and they both got saved. And so I grew up in a first generation Christian home.
That's cool. Super cool.
Which was amazing. And I'm very, very thankful for that. Not perfect by any means, but like I grew up in a home that was trying to follow Jesus as best as possible.
And I think that's cool though. There's almost like, there's no template, so you're doing things probably necessarily messily, but still pursuing Jesus. I think that's a cool thing.
Yeah, and I mean, again, like, you know, if you think about all of the immigration that's happened in the recent years of people coming to America from all over the world, like those the people with the first generation thing, there's a lot of challenge there because you're getting used to a new culture, a new language, a new way of living. Second generation usually gets the benefit of that. And that's the case for me with my faith journey, right?
Yeah.
So I was raised in a Christian home. I was raised hearing the gospel. I was raised going to church. And so for me, it's a pretty similar story to someone that's had generation and generation and generation of lineage of faith. I heard the gospel at an early age. I think I got saved when I was probably eight. I went to Parkridge Chapel, which is just a little bit north of here where we are in Woodinville at Imprint. And I remember I was at a kids camp, and I think I raised my hand every time to receive salvation.
Just to make sure.
Thing.
Yeah,
exactly. And the kids pastor kind of pulled me aside the last day. Maybe five was enough.
Yeah, totally.
And he walked me through Ephesians 2:8-9. It's like, hey, it's by grace that you've been saved through faith. This is not of your own doing. It's a gift of God. He goes, so if you've put your faith in that, you don't have to continue to keep doing it. Like the Lord's done it, it's done. I think you're going to be good.
Yeah.
And so I was fortunate just to grow up in that environment. Half of my family loves Jesus. Half of my my siblings, half of my family loves Jesus, sold out for Jesus. Half of them absolutely don't. But I was just fortunate that I heard the gospel, responded to it, and have been able to live a very imperfect life since then. So
yeah, that's awesome, man. I think there's something that's a fairly typical story. And we had a conversation with someone last week, and they were saying, like, man, praise the God for a boring testimony. Praise God for a boring testimony. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what you
want. In quotes, boring.
You know, it's still radical, but often we want to, like, color it up and be like, yeah, you know, I was... got saved when I was 8 and dealing cocaine before that. But in reality, like, there's something amazing about that generational Christianity that you're talking about.
It took me a while to figure that out. And I was in 8th grade and I actually lied about my testimony. One time. I was supposed to go in front of the church. Everyone's sharing about how they did stuff. And you know, whenever anyone comes up with a testimony, they're always smoking and drinking and doing stuff, right?
Exactly,
so I'm this, you know, very naive, innocent child that I'm like, my testimony sucks. And so I was like, you know what? So I walked right up there and I said, yeah, like before Jesus got a hold of my life, I was smoking and I never got into the hard stuff or anything like that, but you know, God really saved me from a lot. Just lying through my teeth.
God. 3rd grade was wild.
Just lying through my teeth about everything. And then someone comes up to me and is like, I bet the middle school pastor knows, even if you didn't tell him, like, he just knows those things. And I was like, oh shoot, he knows those things. Like, So it took me a long time to be okay with, like, yeah, like, I got saved early on, and I'm very thankful for it because I got protected from a lot of things. I still have my fair amount of sin and all of those things.
Yeah.
It's just most of mine happened after I had already put my faith in Jesus. That's when I made my big mistakes,
right?
Which
can be even more destabilizing, where it's confusing. You're young and you're like, I thought that things were supposed to be different, but they most certainly aren't. I still have this tendency towards, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I would say that, like, for me, because, again, getting saved in an early age and, like, going up, being super involved in youth group and things like that, you know, leading worship, going on those trips, going on mission trips, all that kind of stuff. Like, yeah, you kind of have this air of, like, you're kind of, like, unbreakable in a sense.
Exactly. Yeah,
and
that.
So, but it's all a sham, right? So, like, I looked amazing on the outside, but inside I had this secret habitual sin that I was struggling with. You know, with sexual sin and things like that I was working through and having to go through all of those types of things. And it's amazing how you can fake it until you make it in the church for so long, right?
Yeah,
and so that was a lot of my story too. It's like I looked awesome on the outside, a leader, super involved, leading worship, all of that stuff. And I was at Eastside Foursquare at that time, which was a pretty large church at that time of its church life and that time with me growing up. And so I was very involved, was a worship pastor a worship leader at a church plant in Madison, Wisconsin, like moved out there, things like that. But carried all
How
of that stuff
you?
With me. I was 19.
Okay. So out of high school and you book it out to Madison.
Yeah, I graduated pretty early from school. And so I did 2 years of community college and then went for my last 2 years of school and went and was involved with that church plant, which was just amazingly... poor for me. I was a young punk.
Yeah, you're 19.
I was a young punk. Thought I knew everything and all that stuff. And still had all this, you know, kind of secret sin kind of going on in my life, right?
Yeah.
Which just kind of carried over and kept going. And so it wasn't until after I got married and someone loved me and cared for me, noticed what was going on and actually, like, lovingly called me out on my sin, not grabbing me by the shirt collar and, you know, holding me close and said, if you don't do this, we're kicking you out of the church and things like that. But he also didn't minimize it and be like, bro, it's okay. Everyone goes through that stuff. Like, it's going to be fine. He goes, this is serious. This is something that Jesus had to die for. You're continually wrapped up in it. You're damaging your marriage. You're damaging your witness. You're living a double life. Like, I love you. I'm not leaving. I want to help you.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that was the thing that really was kind of like that was the big, like, turning point to me where I was like, okay, like, now this is what it looks like to live, like, all in, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally.
I think I was saved at 8. Mm-hmm. I Like, I think that I was saved by the grace of God, all of that kind of stuff. But like really, like when I was like, okay, like there's no turning back, like everything I have, I'm going to give to Jesus, like was around, you know, 24. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
I think there's something to that. I mean, I think a lot of people who have like an experience when they're younger, there's almost like the weight of the grace of God has to hit them later on in some way or another, where it's like, okay, well, I'm going to do all this stuff, but there's still this thing hiding in, or whether it's a secret sin or whatever, where they realize, oh, wait, like God loves me enough to take that. And this is, but God's grace is serious and it really applies here.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, it was at that time that I realized that my sin was actually really serious.
Yeah.
That God was a lot bigger than I ever gave him credit for, that his grace was amazing and like actually appealing to me. Because when you grow up in a church environment, you're just kind of like, yeah, great, sure.
Yeah.
Whatever. But I'm also a really good kid. You know what I mean? Or I can hide it enough to where I look like I'm good. It's just classic Adam in the Garden stuff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
But it was when I got called out on that, that like everything came real. The gospel truly became alive to where I was like, wait, this needs to impact my marriage. This needs to impact my life. And then eventually that turned into, well, this needs to impact other people's lives too.
Yeah.
So you're still in Madison. You're in pastoral ministry already at this point? 19 through 24?
No, 19. So I was in Madison. Yeah, timeline. So like I moved to Madison for 2 years.
Okay.
I was involved in a church plant. It was called The Journey in Madison, Wisconsin. And I went over there originally to be the worship leader at the church plant. Happened to find a school where I could continue to study music because I was like, hey, I'm going to be a worship pastor eventually, all of that kind of stuff. That school happened to be a place where I could continue to play baseball. And so it was church number one, music number two, baseball number three. And then probably about 6 months into that whole time, all of that flipped on its head to where it was baseball was number one, school was number two, and church was number three. There's in most church plants, you know, at least from my experience and books I've read and things like that, usually there's like some kind of disagreement within leadership teams within the first year, right? Mm-hmm. And mine happened quite early.
Oh, fine.
And so, yeah, it's again, I'm 19, I'm a punk, I think I know what I'm doing, I'm an arrogant worship leader guy, right? And so looking back, I'd say it's 90% me and just my issues, right? But I came to the conclusion of like, I'm having a good year with baseball. I'm gonna try to go pro and I'm gonna do everything I can to go all in on that.
Yep.
And so church became like a very loose thing for me, and honestly was probably one of the darker kind of moments of like seasons of my life, because it's amazing how you get out of church fellowship and then just everything kind of gets on the table for you. Lord was gracious. Lord has been gracious in forgiveness and in redemption and all that kind of stuff. But like, it's kind of a sad part of my testimony in some way. But,
yeah.
But where did you meet Ashley? Like, where did she enter the picture?
I met Ashley in high school.
Oh, okay.
So Ashley and I, we started dating right before I graduated high school. She was a junior, I was a senior. We started dating about a month before I graduated. We dated for 2 years before I moved to Madison. We continued dating. We got engaged halfway through that time, and then I moved back. Mm-hmm. So we dated. We were together for 4 years before we got married. It'll be 16 years now.
All right.
This coming August, we've got 4 wonderful kids. Gabe, who's 10. Riley girl, who's 8. Brady girl, who's 7. And then Beckett, who's 4. And we're blessed. We're just so blessed with those kids.
Yeah. Right?
It's amazing.
That's awesome, man. So you guys, you're back here post-Madison. God hits you in the face with grace through someone who says, hey, this is not right, but I'm not leaving. What happens at that point? Because obviously there's, how long was it before you started thinking, wait a minute, this grace is amazing. And you mentioned earlier, you know, this is, maybe I'm supposed to share this with others as part of your vocation. Where did that come in?
Yeah, so I mean, I would say that my story is in a lot of ways kind of like a Jonah story, right? So like I had this calling to like go do this thing, started kind of pursuing it, and then said, nah, I'm going to do my own thing instead. Mm-hmm. And that was probably the time when I was like, I'm done with that, I was always of the mindset of like, well, I'll go to church and I'm going to follow Jesus, but like, I don't want nothing. I want nothing to do with the ministry. Mm-hmm. Once I didn't go pro, then it was like, I'm going to own a business and I'm going to have a house on the water and be involved and be one of those guys at church.
Yeah.
Kind of a thing.
Yeah.
I never like walked away from the faith or anything like that, but it was always kind of like, yeah, like I'm going to go after the American dream kind of a thing.
Was that because of the experience that you had? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, 90% me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
it
is what it is, right? It's my selfishness, my pride and the whole thing.
But it was wounding regardless of whether you knew, who was
absolutely. Yeah, well, in that moment, 100% their fault, right?
Right, of course, of course. You're an idea.
I've got no context, no perspective, man. Nothing. Yeah, right. Yeah. So it's just kind of whatever.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, it was me. But like I started working in a construction job, and I was kind of heading towards that, bought my first home. You know, Ashley and I are married for 2 years at that point. And that's when we left the church that we were attending, and we started attending Canyon Hills. Mm-hmm. And when we attend Canyon Hills, that's when we got into the biblical counseling stuff. We'd gone in for an issue that was outside of our marriage, some family things that we were trying to get some wisdom on, which really quickly became about us, which really quickly, like we were there. It was like a Tuesday. And he goes, okay, Ashley, like, hey, you're doing great. I'm praying for you. I think you're solid. Jeff, I'll see you next Tuesday. And I was like, what? And that next Tuesday was like, hey, brother, like I wanted to bring this up, just you and me. And he just lovingly saw my sin. He discerned it. He mm-hmm. asked enough questions. He gathered the data and just lovingly called it out in my life. I walked through that with him. That was probably a, I don't know, 6 to 9 month process where there was the process of dealing with the habitual sin, getting freedom from that sin, starting to experience some faithfulness in that area of my life. That happened about the same time as one of the other pastors that was at Canyon Hills when we were attending and members at the time, who came around me and he just challenged me. He goes, Jeff, you're way involved. I was like one of those rock star volunteer kind of mm-hmm. things. I'm leading worship a bunch. I'm involved with youth. I host a group in my home, all of that kind of stuff. And so I'm being renewed and restored on a heart level,
yeah.
which is wonderful, yeah. still serving those areas. And he's like, Jeff, he goes, you're a leader, but you need to be in your Bible. Mm. And I was like, okay,
nice.
Okay, cool. That's good. And he goes, if you want to be a leader of men, he goes, you need to be reading your Bible cover to cover twice a year.
Oh man.
And I was like,
yeah.
I was like, I don't know. I said, Pastor Mark, I said, I don't know if I've even read every word in the Bible. And he goes, what? he's a Boston guy. And so the Boston
no
came
nonsense.
Out.
Yeah, like.
And he was like, you got to be kidding me. Like you are leading people now and you haven't read every promise. You haven't read every warning. You haven't read every word. Like he's like, this has got to happen. And so he challenged me and I did it. And the first time through reading the Bible while I mean, this is kind of parallel tracks with me doing the counseling stuff. Mm-hmm. So I'm reading the Bible like crazy, seven chapters a day, reading through it 6 months. The first time I read it, I was like, this is really hard. The second time I read it, I was like, oh my gosh, my sin, along with the counseling work I'm doing, I was like, my sin's terrible. And the grace of God is incredible. And then the third time I read through the Bible in that fashion, so about a year and a half after that challenge, I was convinced. I was like, how does the world not know this?
Yeah, right.
How is this is so clear, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's when I really started pursuing ministry again.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I feel like the Lord was like, okay, like you've come back. The calling's the same, but you're going to do it my way now.
Yeah,
and so,
sweet.
Yeah, kind of been off and running from there.
Man, that's amazing.
So what was that process in community as you're like catching this vision for vocational ministry? What was your community telling you or helping you with, or what was the involvement there?
Yeah, so I mean, I've always been a pretty open book of just like, yep, like this is what's going on and things like that. And so I had multiple levels of community. One, I mean, my dad was the owner of the business that I was working for. And so I was talking with him because that meant likely leaving his company that I was going to be taking over.
Mm.
And he loves Jesus and was not pumped about what I was thinking about, but understood and was very supportive. And then I have friends. I was involved. We were life group leaders. And so just kind of sharing that type of thing. And so we had people that were praying for us there. You know, I was very, very connected at Canyon Hills at the time. And so just sharing with them where I'm thinking. So I had pastors that were praying for me and stuff like that. So I honestly, Ashley and I had a ton of support as we were walking through this. And the nice thing about it from Ashley too is that when she met me, I was leading worship all the time, felt like I had the call to be a pastor. And she's like, I knew the minute I started dating you that if this was going to go to marriage, that I was going to end up being a pastor's wife.
Yeah.
So there was like that kind of large detour that I took, but it was kind of, Ashley was like,
yeah,
we need no time. Kidding. Come on,
right? Here we are.
Thanks for figuring it out.
Yeah. What was her experience? Like, was that a big deal for her being married to a pastor, or was it like just a cool, like this is who you are? Or was there any history with that for her?
No history with that for her. So her story, actually, salvation story, is pretty similar to where her parents got saved right around the time that she was born too.
Okay.
And then she came to faith kind of early on. She had no qualms, no worries. She was like, I know that this is the Lord's call in your life. Like,
yeah.
And so she's been nothing but supportive as I've kind of stepped into pastoral ministry. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously there's really difficult seasons.
Really?
Yeah, sure.
No, I'm just kidding.
I don't know if you've experienced that before, Brett, but it can get challenging at times.
I've heard about that.
Yeah. It's crazy. The first month, so I... But it wasn't like a, hey, I feel called in like the next month it happened.
Sure.
It was just, you know, it's not how the Lord works in my life.
Yeah.
You know, I trying to, I had never finished my degree because I tried to go pro in baseball. And so I took less classes and just did the bare minimum to do that. So I was a few classes short. And when I felt this call in the ministry, they're like, hey, you don't have your education. Like Canyon Hills was like, hey, we want to really encourage you to get your education, train yourself for this. This is a lifetime calling. Get the training and all that stuff. And there's different modes of thoughts in there. But I was like, yeah, sure, totally. Well, I got all my classes. I took my classes, finished all that stuff up. And while that was happening, I started interning at Canyon Hills. And my internship was starting the college ministry.
Oh, cool.
So that was, I worked 10 hours a week, which was probably 30 hours a week in total, right?
Yeah.
I'm working full-time for my dad. Yeah. I'm working full-time for my dad, and I'm doing my classes all at the same time. So it's
and you're
busy,
married.
And I'm married.
How many
no kids?
At
that time.
Okay,
I think we were pregnant. Yeah, we were pregnant.
Oh, man. Wow, that's a full plate.
Yeah. You're right, brother.
His eyes just glazed over
really
for a second.
Yeah.
It was awesome, though. Honestly, I loved every bit of it. And so it didn't feel like... It didn't feel as busy as then when you look back and reflect on it. But when I got done, Canyon Hills was gracious enough to decide that I was doing a good enough job, I guess, to warrant a position. And so they hired me on as pastor. And the first month that I was hired on as pastor, we had two infant deaths at the church.
Oh,
we had someone, you know, a baby that was 2.5 months old and kind of rolled over, suffocate thing.
Man.
Tragic, right? Yeah. And they're like, hey, we need a pastor to lead worship for this. And he was a firefighter. And so there's going to be 600 people at the ceremony. And I'm leading you give and take away while I'm looking at the family just sob.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what are we doing here, right?
Yeah.
And like, and then a few weeks later, we had someone it was a miracle that the baby was even born, but never left Children's Hospital.
Yeah. Yeah.
Died about a week after he was born. And that was a very small ceremony, but they asked me to lead worship. And I had written a song, and they asked me to sing that song.
Woof.
And so I get done with that ceremony and the totality of those things. I go over to my cubicle, and I'm just sobbing.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, Lord, is this what you've called me to? It's like this, like I took a significant pay cut for this, right?
Yeah.
And after about 10 minutes of like processing through that and crying and, you know, blowing my nose and all that kind of stuff, I just said, okay, Lord, like this is what you've called me to do. And so if this is what this looks like for the rest of my time, that's great. By God's grace, it hasn't always been that.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's those seasons of really difficult times and difficult things that you have to do within ministry. But again, it's... Like once the Lord kind of confirmed that call for my life, It's like there's no plan B. There's no turning back. Like it's going to be, this is what God wants me to do.
Mm-hmm. So let's back up just a little bit. How did the Lord confirm that call in your life? It sounds like you had a great community at Canyon Hills. You had some people in leadership who were speaking into you, both in the context of like, hey, let's develop personal holiness and let's be in the Bible. At what point did that conversation switch to like, hey, we see this in you and think maybe this is something. Is that something you pursued or is it something that they kind of helped bring out of you or was it just kind of a natural evolution?
I think it was probably something that through that discipleship time, I don't think that they had an agenda in their discipleship time with me, but I think that that's where it...
kind of where it went.
That's where it went. And it, I don't think... I've had conversations with people where I've said, hey, I really think that you should consider going into ministry. I don't think they had that conversation with me. I think it was like, I'm fired up. I think that the Lord might be calling me to do this forever kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was how it went for me. And so, you know, and I had to get, I felt like I needed confirmation from a number of people. The first and foremost was my wife. Mm-hmm. Yeah. She needed to confirm that. We needed to be in agreement because that's a huge life change. The pastors that had known my stuff and seen the things that I had gone through, like I asked the pastors that knew my sin and knew what I was walking through in that way. And because if they would confirm it, then I was like, okay, well then they know my dirty laundry.
Yeah. Game on. Yeah.
Exactly. And so, I think once it became clear to me, everyone was very like, yes.
Yeah.
Like we see this too.
That's awesome. Yeah. So you go on at Canyon Hills. How long were you there?
I attended Canyon Hills for 12 years. I was a pastor there for 9.5.
Okay, gotcha, man. Yeah, so you were there for a little while, and you were there as the college pastor for a good amount of that.
Yeah, a number of different things. College pastor for probably 3 years, and then they just started adding other things.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so I would say I was an associate pastor at Canyon Hills. Wore a lot of different hats, started a lot of different ministries there, got the privilege and opportunity to preach a few times. That turned into way more often, to where I was one of the kind of the main backup preachers that was there. I did baptisms, college ministry, young marrieds, pastoral residencies, biblical counseling, all that kind of stuff.
So you really cut your teeth there, it sounds like. There's just almost everything you had your hands in.
Yeah, and Canyon Hills was amazing for me, like really formative for me when it looked like to be in ministry. And they provided me the means to be able to get certified as a biblical counselor, to get my master's, to learn how to build a ministry from scratch, to make mistakes in a pretty safe environment, honestly. Yeah, yeah. Like I had the ability to take risks because I had this just like
it was a big net
ocean of support,
it,
right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. A huge net. And so I just took full advantage of that to learn as much as I could. You know, I think that's, you know, I read a book, Making of the Leader by William Clinton and, that longtime pastor. And he said like, usually the first 5 years of your ministry, you're not being very good for them, but God is doing a lot of things in you. And that was totally true in my life, right? So ineffective ministry.
You're actually a great liability.
100%. Yeah. Not worth the pay cut that I got, right? Yeah. And but within that, I was able to learn a ton, grow a ton. They were very patient with me, gracious with me. And then they just kept giving me more and more and more, which was a huge blessing. So
that's great.
Yeah, I learned to learn.
What passions did you see kind of develop in you and during those years where you're just trying everything? Like where did your sense of calling kind of evolve at all there? Or was it just, you know, you're just loving everything that's coming down the pipeline and just want more?
When I got interviewed to be a pastor, they said, where do you see yourself in 10 years? And I said, I see myself as a senior pastor of a healthy church.
Okay.
And they were like, this one? And I go, no. Like
I'm here to take over.
I was like, I love Steve. Like I want him to keep his job. I don't have any plans to take his job. But like that was I always kind of knew that this was the trajectory. So I tried to intentionally do as many things as possible. I said yes to everything.
Yeah.
There's a lot of other people that they were like, nah, I feel like I'm really in my lane. I was like, give me every lane. I want to try everything. I want to learn as much as I can to try to comprehensively know and understand and get passionate about different things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so that was always what I felt like the target was for me. And so I tried to learn that way. So I really, as I did that, and as I started a new ministry, or as I created something, or tried to reestablish something, or whatever that might be, my passion for that just grew.
Yeah.
And it forced me to really, I think the thing that probably shifted in me though the most was really kind of every pastor at Canyon Hills, is required to do biblical counseling, at least one biblical counseling session a week. They encourage you to get certified with the American Certification of Biblical Counselors, all of that kind of stuff. And so within that, it was really the private ministry of the word, that one-on-one, hey, you've got this sin going on in your life. I've sat on that side of the table, and now I get to minister the gospel to you and your situation right now, whether it be sin, suffering, whatever. I get to minister to you. Man, that transformed my preaching, my leadership, everything. So because of that, I think that's why I minister the way that I do now.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Like the real hard work of pastoring is what kind of fired you up. Yeah.
I love it. It's you know, that's... You know, when I see the biblical example of what we're supposed to do, 1 Timothy 4 stuff, everyone looks at preach the word. No one looks at the next thing of like the reprove, rebuke, exhort with complete patience and teaching.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that could be public or private. And so yeah. Like, I love all of it. I honestly get pumped about the whole thing.
You're at Canyon Hills for 9 years. Now you're not at Canyon Hills. Now you are pastor of a church called Hope Community Church in Snohomish. What did that transition look like? Where did the church planting bug kind of come from? And what did the process of getting that going look like?
It's because you weren't able to oust Steve, right? So
yeah, exactly. Try as you may, he couldn't back
so
him
out.
So
many political plays, right? No. I want Steve to work for another 15 years. Like, He's a blessing, and I'm thankful for how just consistent and faithful he is to the word, to preaching the scripture, to how he leads his team. He's so sneaky generous too, and like no one knows it. And so, you know, people listen to the podcast, don't tell anyone, but like,
all four of you.
He's just a wonderful guy. I love him to death. Mm-hmm. I would say that the church planting bug happened for me. Again, I started with ministry thinking like, hey, I think that the Lord is calling me to senior pastor ministry for a long season, right? Mm-hmm. And I was totally flexible to however that would look. As I just watched church plants in the area just kind of happen, rise up. You know, I'm very good friends with some of the guys at Reach over in Kirkland.
Yeah.
As I watched Darren do things with Imprint, as I talked with Tom, as he was working through stuff and coming over to, like, I was just listening, gathering information, reading books, and just kind of processing from afar for a long time. And church planting was not at that time, like, in the DNA of Canyon Hills. Hmm. So that there was no, like, track or trajectory there. So I just kind of watched and observed, and just kind of, while I was starting brand new things all the time at Canyon Hills. So I think the Lord was kind of preparing my heart to a new thing. Mm-hmm. I was always, it's like, hey, we need a brand new ministry. Jeff, you're the guy to start it up. You've got the energy for it and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I felt like the Lord was kind of prepping me for new things often. Mm-hmm. But I also love, I don't think I'm the kind of guy where it's like, hey, I'll be somewhere for 2 years and then I'll leave and go to the next thing. It's like, yeah. Once I start something, I like to be pretty loyal to it. But, yeah. So I would say it's been probably the last 5 years. It's kind of been brewing. There's a guy, one of my mentors, Brian Rickey, Tom, you know him.
Yeah, he's a great dude.
Yeah. We met and I just kind of shared with him that stuff. And so he just started developing and mentoring in me and kind of encouraging me in some of those things. But it was always just off to the side, always back burner stuff. Canyon Hills made the decision because of the size and the growth of the church that they were like, we need to start looking at other kind of church strategy options. We don't want to run 3 services or 4 services. Now they are, but
yeah.
But at the time they were like, what do we do with this? And so we started looking at different options, and they tasked me with kind of that special project of look into everything. So I looked into the total franchise model where everything is exactly the same and it's video and all that kind of stuff. I looked into, kind of family network of church things with like Redemption down in Arizona or something that you guys like tried to start to do before COVID. I looked into everything. I looked into church planting, everything. And I had to write up a pretty comprehensive report, and I called people, did interviews, all that kind of stuff. I mean, it was a lot of work putting into it. And while that happened, Canyon Hills was like, oh, we really like this way. And I was like, I like almost the exact opposite personally. But, but that was probably 4 years ago. And 4 years ago, they were like, Jeff, we'd like you to be the campus pastor at this new place. And I was like, you know what? Like, that's awesome. Like, that's what a great next step for me to learn even more in leadership and to grow. I was going to get to preach probably 50% of the sermons, kind of a thing. So it was a great opportunity, because we didn't want to do the video thing.
Yeah, yeah.
They were
like,
we want live preaching, rotating preaching. So I was going to be preaching 24 to 36 times a year. I was like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Like, I can do that. That sounds great. And the Lord just kind of kept closing doors. He kept closing doors for Canyon Hills. And while he was doing that, I was preparing for leadership, for another step in leadership, reading books, praying, talking with people, getting my stuff in order, all of those types of things. And the Lord just kept saying no, while the Lord kept on stirring up this passion in my heart for like, I'm calling you to this. I'm calling you to this. And then finally there was a time where there was an opportunity that Canyon Hills, where we kind of, Canyon Hills wisely decided, this is not the thing, we're stepping back from this.
Yeah.
And then for me, I said, okay, Lord, like, what's going on? This is like the fifth thing that has kind of fallen through in the last minute. And I just became convinced. I was like, I think that I'm the reason the Lord's saying no, because I think that Lord has something else for me to do.
Okay.
And so I went back to my same level of kind of confirmation process. I went to Ashley and I said, and 5 years ago when I'm like, oh, I'm going to plant a church or something, she's like, you're so dumb. And then I went to her and I said, Ash, I think that God might be calling me to something new.
Yeah.
And not at Canyon Hills. And she's like, yeah, I think so too. Huh. Like, nothing wrong there, or there's no conversation or something. It's just like, I feel like the Lord's calling. And Ashley confirmed it, and then we were kind of off and running from there.
Oh, is this 2019 by chance?
Yeah. No, it was 2020.
Okay.
It was March of 2020 that, March of 2020 was when I had the conversation with Ashley. Okay. And then it was April of 2020 that I had the conversation with Steve.
What's percolating around your brain there? You're smiling.
Thinking of timelines and what worldly wisdom would indicate as the best time to plant a new community.
Yeah,
it's not then.
Yeah, it's worldly, conventional wisdom. Not, like, but it sounds like there's a healthy community going on, and that worldly wisdom hasn't won out. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah. I mean, like, again, if you look at it from, kind of look at it objectively, it's like, wait, you made a decision to plant a church literally the month that COVID happened.
Yeah.
And then communicated. And so the next month I communicated with Pastor Steve and said, like, we had a meeting together, and no one's in the church building because the building's shut down. So it's just him and I meeting, right? At a safe distance, of course.
Of course, yeah, yeah.
And I just told him what I felt like the Lord was putting on our heart. And he goes, Jeff, I love you and I love your vision, and that is not a part of Canyon Hill's vision. So if you want to do that, I love you. Look into it. I want you to stay. I want you to be the next campus pastor, and... things like that. And he goes, I want you to stay, but if you want to leave, I love you. I care about you, and you will not do it with our support. And I was like, okay.
That's very direct.
We had, and we have the kind of relationship. Steve and I have a wonderful relationship where we are able to be very honest with each other, very forthright with each other. I'm very thankful for it. And I was thankful that he was that upfront with it.
Yeah,
that
that's
was
a special
And by support,
thing.
He meant financial support, not like, hey, we don't support you in your life emotionally or prayerfully.
I think he meant financial support, yeah. but I think he also said like you would be making a decision to kind of separate from us at that point.
Yeah.
They had done a church plant about 10 years ago. It went really poorly on kind of on both sides.
Okay.
And so there was some hurt there. And I mean, and I knew that kind of going into that conversation. Cause it wasn't the first conversation that, Pastor Steve and I had had about the potential of church planting and stuff like that. We'd argued about that numerous times.
Yeah. I remember you and I chatted on the phone. I remember you telling me that cause we had chatted some, I think you had reached out to Darren and to me, like picking our brains a little bit. And then I was like, oh, what's the update? Cause I knew there was kind of this, is Canyon Hills going to go with the, you know, the campus, or are they going to go with church planting? I was bummed when you said, yeah, they basically was like, we love you, but yeah, we're not going to go that. That's not where we're going.
And that's their, and again, at the time, by God's grace, I've matured a lot. Because I was like, you know what? Hey, if that's their prerogative, that's their.
They're not doing anything wrong.
Sinning against me. They're not doing anything against me by making that decision.
Sure.
Like I have to and if anything, they forced me to make sure that I was really resolved in the decision.
Yeah, 100%.
And so within that, like and they were gracious enough. There was a lot of people that if they went to the senior pastor and said, hey, I'm thinking about planting a church, they're like, okay, good, you're fired. Good luck with your church plant, right?
Yeah.
That didn't happen. Like, it was like, no, we'd love for you to stay.
There wasn't a box on your desk the next time.
Not at all.
Yeah, there could have been a box there.
Not at all. And if anything, I asked permission. I said, well, will you allow me to continue to look into this? Because what you're saying, I totally respect. I still need to look into this.
Yeah.
I feel like the Lord's calling me. And they go, absolutely, please look into it.
That's
let
great.
Us know how it's going. Like, and not in a, let us know if you're getting close so that we can
make other
plans.
Yeah, so we can put an ad out. Yeah.
And so that was probably a 6-month process where I really looked into that, went through that church planning process, vetting process, things like that.
What do you mean looked into it? What is the
I went through the Acts 29 assessment process.
Okay.
I looked at a bunch of different networks and a bunch of different things, and I just determined I determined that Acts 29 was going to be the best assessment process for me to determine whether this is actually something I could do.
Okay.
Both theologically, like in my theology, but then also in my character. And I wanted someone objective that didn't know me to assess me.
Yeah, totally.
And I line up fairly well with Acts 29 theologically. And I like a number of the churches that are in the Acts 29 network. And I was like, but I didn't know any of them well. And I go, that's actually perfect.
Yep.
Totally neutral. And I knew that it was it was a thorough process. And so I wanted it to be that. And so I walked through that process. And as I did that, while still doing my pastoral duties at Canyon Hills, again, it just, the confirmation just kind of kept coming along.
Yeah.
To where I went to their like assessment conference where they check out your character. They bring your wife in, you preach a sermon, and they, you know, they tell you what they think and all of that kind of stuff. Like, I left that conference being like, Ashley, like, I think we can do this. I really think that we can do. And I think that this was what I needed to like confirm. Mm-hmm. And she goes, I felt like I needed this too. And we agreed. So that was like November. And so in November, I then went to the leadership at Canyon Hills and I just said, hey, I think that I need to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, okay, when do you plan to leave? And I still have to get some ducks in a row, and I want to be respectful with this, but like, I think I need to leave in the next 3 to 6 months. And they go, yep, okay, we'll keep you on the whole time. We're going to start talking with the elders about this, because the elders weren't aware or privy to me thinking through this stuff. And so we started walking through that process. Then in February of 2021, I met in front of the staff, and it was presented that I was leaving, stepping down from my role in ministry to go plant a church. So I said goodbye to the staff, and that had some tears because I love those people.
Yeah, you know, totally.
I just love them. And then that night I met with the elders, presented my strategic plan of what I'm doing and all that kind of stuff. And the elders, like, they did what elders need to do. They vetted me and poked holes and challenged me and really saw if my resolve was there. And at the end of it, they're like, They asked, Jeff, how can we support you in this? Like, what does this actually look like for us to root for you in this? What are you asking for from us? And I said, well, three things, three tiers of success here. I said, the first thing is plant me out. Make me the second church plant from Canyon Hills.
Yeah.
I have been here for 9 years. I have been a faithful pastor for 9 years. I love you. And I believe that you love me. Plant me out. This can work. Mm-hmm. I said, if that's not on the table, I said, then give me some oversight and some financial support for a season.
Nice.
Just give me, like, don't have an elder go with me, but have an elder oversee me.
Yeah.
And just give me that accountability. Because that's I don't want to do this alone. That's why I was like, that's why I've gone down the Acts 29 road, because I don't want to do this alone. I think that's
stupid.
Yeah.
Really dumb.
It's stupid.
And I said, and if those two things aren't on the table, then I said, and this is when is when I get choked up, because I just said, just be my friend. Mm-hmm. Because I'm not mad at you. Mm-hmm. There hasn't been any conversation that's happened that's caused me to want to leave.
There's no falling out, nothing.
There's nothing political here. There's no anger here. I love you. I care about you. I'm just being obedient to what God's called me to do. And I walked away from that meeting just heavy and heartbroken, because I was like, that's it. Like, this end of an era kind of a thing. And like, this place has been a place that I love and care about, and we'll be friends, but it'll just be different, you know, how all that kind of thing goes. Yeah. And then 2 days, two days later, Pastor Steve, senior pastor, Pastor Dave, the executive pastor, and one elder, they say, hey, we want to have a meeting with you. And so I get ready for the meeting and hear how the whole thing went. And they said, we want to plant you out.
Wow.
And I was like, what?
Come twice, speak in my good ear.
I was like, say what? I want you to say that again in writing. Yeah. Like, and they just said, and I said, and so we'd start talking about some of the things, and they're like, here's some parameters that they wanted to do with that and all that kind of stuff. And I said, why are you doing this now? But we've been talking about this for 9 months. Why now? And Pastor Steve, he just said, honestly, Jeff, like, I didn't want to do it the entire time, but God used you to change my heart.
Cool. Yeah.
And I was like, okay, let's get it. and I would say since then, like, we announced it a month later. Canyon Hills announced it with like full support.
Was it like, hey, if you want to go with Jeff?
Yep.
Then you have the blessing.
Jeff has the license to go fishing. You got a fishing license.
Yeah,
go get people.
Absolutely. And they gave me like a no holds barred thing on that. Like, hey, if someone from staff wants to go with you, go for it. If someone from the church wants to go with you, go for it.
That's awesome.
Now the way that it ended up working was that no one from staff came with, which was fine. No big leadership team people came with us in the beginning, which was fine. We had all of these kind of like people that were underused, underutilized, mm-hmm. hadn't been serving. And that's the beauty of church planting is that it stirs up believers to be like, I'm in. And so like, we're going through like the eldership process now for Hope. And like the people that we're considering, there's two of them that come from Canyon Hills, one that didn't come from Canyon Hills. And those two guys were not serving in like any capacity and have just become absolute rock stars, growing in their faith like crazy. And I'm like, and it's perfect.
Yep.
There's no huge, you know, this like, oh, like three staff will come with or anything like that, which honestly it was best that it worked out like that.
Yeah.
But like Canyon Hills' support has just gotten exponentially more and more and more as the months have gone on. To the point where we had a pastor elder retreat at Canyon Hills, and they asked me to come because I'm still underneath the authority of the elders there. And, you know, 16 months ago, they're like, hey, we're not a church planting church, Jeff. Love you, but we don't do this. And then we're at the retreat, and they're saying, what do we do with the growth? Because Canyon Hills is growing a lot right now. And they said, what do we do with this growth? And the elders are pounding the table, saying, we have got to plant more churches.
Yeah.
That's a given.
Yes.
We got to sort out other things, but we have to plant churches. And I was just like,
whoa,
what are we doing here? You know what I mean? Just like jaw to the floor type stuff.
That's really cool.
So God's really, really kind of bless this journey for us in that regard.
Yeah. Man, it's super cool to hear that God gave you just that much conviction in your calling, and not just for the sake of you, but it sounds like for the sake of a lot more people. That's incredible. And again, not just for the sake of hope.
Yeah, that could be the very opening of the gate.
Yeah, exactly.
The door to more church planting. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, my role at Cannon Hills was always to start something, and then they figured out who could go in and do it better. And if I'm the starter for church planting, and then they figure out how to do it better. And
great, yeah.
Yep, awesome.
That's awesome. Tell me about Hope. Tell us about Hope. Why'd you pick the name Hope, and why Snohomish? This is your chance to brag on your church, man. What do you love about Hope?
Yeah, so Hope Community, the name is pretty intentional for us. It comes from Hebrews 10, 23 through 25. Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, mm-hmm. for he who promises faithful. And let us consider how to stir up one another to mm-hmm. love and to good works, not neglecting to meet together as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near.
Yeah.
And the way that we define hope is that hope is built on the heart of God, the ongoing work of Jesus, and the promise of eternal life. Mm. And the community is a diverse people with a united hope and a united purpose. And so we come in trying to really emphasize both of those things. We try to be heavy on the gospel and heavy on community.
Yeah.
We started in Snohomish in June with community groups, June of last year. And we started with 5 community groups and about 65 adults that came over to do that, which, I mean, again, in church planning numbers is wild. And so was just very, very blessed by that. And so we started the summer with community groups, and then we launched in October of 2021. Mm. With weekly services. And so we meet in a old historic wedding chapel that used to be a church. It was a Methodist church, and now it's a wedding chapel.
That's a venue,
we rent it out on Sunday mornings. And so we're set up and tear down, and it's all great. It's really good.
Yeah.
And by God's grace, we've been able to see lives changed. You know, again, you start a church plant so that new people come to faith in Jesus. We've seen that. Mm-hmm. You emphasize church planting and multiplication so that leaders that are kind of sleepy or not or underutilized get stirred up
to
love and good works, and that's happened in a huge way. So, we've seen in our community groups, we've seen sin confessed, we've seen suffering brought out into the light, we've seen people pursue their faith more in discipleship. We've seen people actually experience what it looks like to be part of a biblical family.
Yeah.
And we've seen people excited about that and bring other people in that are either haven't been to church since COVID mm-hmm. or struggling totally. With things or all of those, or not familiar with faith at all. But mm-hmm. like, we've just seen those be a great place to foster all that.
Praise God. Yeah.
So God has blessed us above and beyond.
That's great, man.
It's been really cool.
What was it that led you out towards Snohomish in particular? Was that just a strategic decision, or did
you
guys feel?
So you guys can call each other Snohomies.
Yeah, that's
it. Is that what it is?
There you go.
Exactly. So
that's why I would go out there.
It was a good one.
No, what do you call people? That's what I was going to ask. We had Gasparetti in here. He grew up in Snohomish. I was like, what do you call people like Bothellites? You know, what do you call people in Snohomish? Snohomians?
People? I don't know. Yeah. I'm just
humans. No, like
men and women.
Like
Washingtonians.
I think we have to call them Snohomies now.
Snohomies.
I think Snohomies is great.
Yeah,
I like.
Great.
I've adopted that now.
So, what made you drawn to the Snohomies?
So, I think the Snohomish is strategic on a number of levels.
Yeah.
It's the intersection of Highway 2 and Highway 9. Mm-hmm. So there's major cities that kind of impact and intersect right there. So if, you know, I desire Hope Community to be a church planting church. And I desire us to be a local community church.
Mm-hmm.
So if we are pulling a lot of people from Monroe, because Monroe's 10 minutes from Snohomish, well, by God's grace, I pray that we would plant a church in Monroe.
Totally.
That we'd build a leader up. Same thing with Marysville or Arlington or Granite Falls or Everett or, you know, maybe Bothell someday. Who knows? And so I think that having that intersection makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. Our family was doing a lot of life out in Snohomish. Mm-hmm. That's where Ashley and I got married. Ashley's parents had moved out there. So we were just kind of going out there a lot more. I think originally we wanted to look at Mill Creek. Kind of through conversation with Canyon Hills as well, they were like, hey, because Canyon Hills still currently is looking for a second campus. And they're like, hey, our ideal spot would be Mill Creek. Is there a way that you could go out to Snohomish or somewhere else or things like that? And we prayed through that and worked through that. And we said, absolutely, yes, we can. In partnership with you, it's a kingdom win, I think, all the way around.
Yeah, yeah.
And really, we love and have loved the people of Snohomish and kind of the greater area. It's a wonderful area. It is an area that has a lot of churches. It's an area that has a lot of healthy churches, but it's such an intersection for people. It's like the gathering place for so many of those cities that are kind of around that really all of the churches are there.
Yeah.
And so it kind of makes sense. And
more
so,
churches,
like,
is not bad.
Yeah. And we've tried to really get to know the churches in that area and try to root them on as best we can and be public with our rooting them on.
We're not another franchise here trying to take customers.
100%.
Like
Yeah. So we've kind of loved our time there.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, man. Well, I'll ask you two questions. What are you praying for your church right now? And then, man, how can we join you in that?
Right, because we're asking our folks, just a reminder to the listeners, that when we get done with this, when you get done listening to this, is to pray for Jeff and his family and to pray for Hope Community Church. So tell us how we can pray for you personally, your family, and your church community. It'd be awesome.
Yeah.
So, first and foremost, my family. I mean, my wife Ashley and I, we've been married 15, coming on 16 years in August. Mm. That I would keep things in order. I'm called to be a child of God first, a husband to Ashley second, a dad to Gabe, Riley, Brady, Beckett third, and then everything else after that. So Hope Community is really important. I'm called to that ministry, but it doesn't even make the medal stand. and I need to keep those things in priority order. And it's really easy when you're in the middle of a big project, like, you know, remodeling a home or, I don't know, starting a church, where you can get overwhelmed and you can get fixated on that stuff. And so I'm trying to be cognizant of that and keep my marriage first.
Yeah, totally.
So I would ask, you know, the people of Imprint or whoever's listening to pray for Ashley and I. Pray that we'd be unified, that we'd be a picture of Ephesians 4, 1 through 3, that we would bear with one another in love, eager to maintain the unity of the Spirit and the bond of peace, that I'd live with her in an understanding way, 1 Peter 3:7, that I would wash her with the water of the word and hold her up, as holy and pure without blemish or spot, Ephesians 5, 25 and 26, that would be the way that I operate in love and care for my wife.
Absolutely, yeah.
That my kids would love being a ministry family, that they wouldn't have a negative inkling or impact on the church, that we would balance that well, loving our kids, and that the church would know that my kids take priority over things of the church.
Yeah.
And that would be clear. Yeah. Not to the detriment of their faith or of our faith, but that if it's a choice between my son or my daughter, or something at church, like, within reason, I'm going to pick my kids every time. If everything's equal, I'm going to pick my kids every time.
Yeah.
For Hope, you just asked me the question about Snohomish, but we're in this interesting season right now. So I don't know, what's the turnaround on these typically from
it'll be a few weeks for this one.
Okay, sweet. Yeah. So if things fall right, we will actually be getting ready to move to a new location. We've been in a merger conversation with a church in South Everett, with Canyon Hills knowing everything, being in total support of all of that. We are with a church in South Everett. They've been super, super faithful. The pastor there has been in ministry for over 40 years, but is looking to retire. They haven't been able to find a replacement pastor for some time. And so, we have someone from our church that knows him very well. And so we just approached him and just said, hey, what would you think about a merger potential here? We've been looking for a permanent home basically since we've started. Love where we're at, but you know, this is an opportunity for us to potentially get a permanent home. And
I can appreciate that sentiment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And so, and right now, you know, June 26th will be the final vote for that. Their elders have decided to, hey, we really want to move forward with this. We think it's going to be a unanimous vote from the church to move forward with this, which would be an absolute game changer for us. And so if that happens, I'm going to speak as if it's happening. Name it and claim it, right?
Kind yeah, totes. Yeah. Yeah. That's the Jesus version of manifestation.
Jeff just had people starting to leave his church. We were with you all the way until
I'm
that,
joking
man.
With you guys. Jeez. But like, if it's happening and if people are listening and that vote has been positive, we want to care for the people of this church. I guess
yeah.
I'll keep it private
yeah,
in case
yeah,
it doesn't go through. We want to care for that church very, very well.
Yeah, you don't want to steamroll with your church.
We want to honor that pastor. We want to love him and care for him, help him to retire. That's a whole nother story of how God has worked through that whole thing. We want to love that congregation and in some ways help them grieve. Because mm-hmm. this is a king. I mean, both leadership teams have agreed this is a huge kingdom win for many levels.
Yeah,
but it's a change.
It is yep. a change,
and so that will impact both Hope and this other congregation. And so we're praying like crazy for them that I as the pastor would love and shepherd them well.
Yeah,
that we'd care for them, that transition would be smooth, and that we would reach. We would continue to reach people in kind of the greater area and plant churches from there. So that's the prayer if we get it. And if we don't get it, then honestly, we're praising God because there would have to be something come up that made it really obvious that we shouldn't be doing
yeah,
this.
Totally.
And then God gave us a big protection at the end. So either way, we're going to be praising the Lord.
Yeah.
But I guess I would ask the people of Imprint to really be praying for us there. We're also in the middle of kind of an elder installation process.
Yeah.
We've identified, and now we're kind of in the vetting process with a few key select men. And just that we would have wisdom there, and that we would, that the Lord would reveal if these are the right people for us to pursue. Because I am a huge plurality of eldership guy, and I have no elders right now. And so I feel the weight
tough.
Of all of that
that's
stuff.
That's a lonely place
yeah.
for sure.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. And so, and I think it's the healthiest thing for Hope Community yeah. mm. and for future church plants down the road. So if you could be praying for us with that, that would be amazing.
We absolutely will.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, Jeff, thank you seriously so much for coming on here and sharing
yeah, thanks for
what's
sharing
going on.
Super encouraging.
Yeah, it's been great to hear. Great to hear how the Lord's using you, and we'll be praying that he will continue to do so just as Jeff Potts, and then also through Hope and whatever else is down the road. So
one thing I wanted to say just right at the end, like Imprint was huge for us in starting the thing. Like even before we had the support from Canyon Hills, I met with Imprint and the elders and kind of shared my vision for church planting, and they were generous in deciding to support us in the beginning. And that, I mean, the validation of that as a young church planter, like not knowing if this is going to work, but feeling this conviction from the Lord, like the it was wonderful. So like, you know, to Darren and to Tom and to all the elders and stuff like that, like it was just such a beautiful thing to have that encouragement. And really, I think was a huge mark for me to want to root for other churches as well. So thank you for leading the awesome. Way in that and being a great example yeah. for me.
Well, we believe in you, man. That's why we supported you. And it's really cool for us to have this come somewhat full circle here and be able to have you share your story because our folks give generously to Imprint Church, which enable us to give generously toward church plants in the area that we believe in.
Yeah.
And so it's just cool for our people to be able to hear
some yeah, and of to their be generosity. Encouraged
yeah.
by
yeah.
this. Totally. Personally and as a community, thanks, man.
100%. Jeff, if people want to, if they have questions or they want to shoot you encouragement, you know, I've heard it said like no one is too encouraged. So encouragement goes along. Hebrews says encourage one another daily as long as it's called today. So if someone wants to ask you a question or shoot you some encouragement, how can they do that?
Yeah, so two ways. So through, you can email me, jeff.potts@hopesnohomish.com. Just email me directly and happy to answer questions or field encouragement or concern or anything in between.
Maybe no concern about that.
or you can reach out to us on our, you know, on IG or Facebook or something like that. It's just @hope.snohomish. And we'd love to connect with people. We, we count it a privilege to know the family of God.
Absolutely.
And we have no desire to see anyone from Imprint come and worship with us at Hope.
But if they did, we'd be okay.
Yeah, we'd
be
cool with it.
Well, if they did, that'd be a privilege. Yeah. That'd be a new privilege for us. But we love just knowing that God is moving and God is working. So I'm encouraged by what you guys are doing. And yeah, if people want to reach out to us, that'd be great.
Sounds great. Yeah, well, guys, if nothing else, shoot Jeff some encouragement. Thanks for being on here, man. We really appreciate it. We will be back next week with more stories of what God is doing in the area. We'll see you next week.
Toodaloo.
Thanks for listening. For more information and resources from Imprint Church, you can download our app or head to imprintchurch.org.